Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to this bonus edition of the Reasonable Doubt podcast. My name is Rob Rosen. I'm the creator and executive producer of Reasonable Doubt.
And I'm Fatima Silva, criminal defense attorney and co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
And I am investigator Chris Anderson, a retired homicide detective and co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
All right, so this bonus episode is because the very first episode that ever aired of Reasonable Doubt was about rapper Mac Phipps. And it was a case that you got behind. Chris, you had a different partner in that first season. Mac Phipps, a couple of months ago, was released. He had been sentenced to 30 years for the murder of a guy named Baron Victor, who had been a fan who had been at one of his shows. It basically was a one witness case, and he did serve 21 years, but he got an early release and he's a free man. And in a little bit, we're going to play a conversation with him. We caught up to him back home in New Orleans.
Yeah, man, it was really, really good to see Mac released and now he's free and out of prison. You know, it just lets you know that in some cases, our criminal justice system is just not as effective as it should be. You know, here's a case where there were several witnesses initially that never really had much to add into the case. But when it came down to court, it became a one witness ID. And now that witness is now recanting his statement. So, you know, but it was good to see Mac free. He's a completely changed man. And it was just a joy to catch back up with him and talk with him.
Now, Fatima, I have a feeling I know what you're going to say to this, but yet again, we're talking about a case. There were two witnesses at Mac's trial. One of them just fell apart and basically recanted on the stand. So basically, the jury convicted based on one witness.
This case is extremely troubling. The one witness IDs, they're so difficult, and we know that from so many of our episodes. But this one especially, I thought was even more interesting because it made sense, right? So in other cases, you're like, well, why would somebody identify that person? And that's kind of what people seem to keep thinking, right? Why did she identify him? What was it about him that she would have identified him? And this, you could apply this to any one of our episodes where we have this, but, and you think, oh, maybe it was just random. But I think a lot of people, especially on the jury, would say, well, why would someone just pick out a random person? No, they must have seen them. This case is different and even scarier because Mac is popular. Everybody knows him. People are there to watch him. And he admits, I'm running through the club with a gun. So it looks bad. It looks like he's possibly the one who did it. And he admits that. He says, I mean, that definitely did not look good. But his response made sense, right? I mean, you're carrying, he was legally carrying, correct, Chris?
That's correct.
And so, you know, the kinds of hip hop clubs and party scene, and when these concerts are happening, these kinds of things happen. These kinds of fights break out. I live in Oakland. I live in the Bay Area. So it happens a lot. And it's not unusual for somebody to be strapped to try to protect themselves in case they're a target. There's so many things that if you were to see it from the outside and just take away that identification, right, which he admits to, he's running through the club with a gun. But if you just he's there and his family is working the doors. He's got his family there with him. His parents are there. Is this a guy who's just going to go off and shoot someone? Is this the kind of guy that he is? And I appreciated the episode because it got into a little more about his background. And I think people often do have this perception that the lyrics and your art defines who you are, but it is still a job. It is still a way to earn an income. And sometimes people, they forget that doesn't mean that's the real person, right? A lot of people see Chris and I on television and we're not actors. We're not faking who we are, but there's a lot to us you also don't see, right? There's silly sides to us. There's, you know, very bold. And
I think they've picked up on this if they listen to the podcast, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I do want to play one clip from D1, who's a rapper who made friends with Mac. He had a really good comment, I thought, about this idea that someone could use an artist's words or lyrics against them.
They pulled one over on the jury with that one. If we were all held accountable for 100% of the words that we have ever said in our lives, all of us would be guilty.
That was just a great comment. And talking to D1 or watching that interview with D1 was just amazing, because I've been a fan of his for a very long time. And you know, he's always been a very positive and uplifting type hip hop artist. But if people see him on the street, they would probably get a different perspective of who he is. But that man is incredibly intelligent and very, very well spoken. So I enjoyed that interview. And Fatima, you said something that was very important and I just don't want us to really just pass over without mentioning it. During some of these cases that we look into, when we look into those cases, it's the explanation that doesn't make sense in a lot of the cases. It's their response to what the people on the jury were saying that didn't make sense. Well, when you look at this case is different because everything that he said, it makes sense. If you've been a fan of hip hop, you know that there are fights that break out. If you've been a fan of anything, the first or if you're a son or and you know that your parents are somewhere around where there is violence happening, the first thing that you're going to want to do is you're going to want to protect your family. So Max says that when he hears the shots, he pulls out his gun and he runs through the crowd to do what? To find his parents. That's exactly what I would have done had I been in that exact same situation. So everything in this case was understandable. And there was just a lot that went into it. That was a little bit
different. I thought it was really interesting with the witness identification expert, because we talk a lot about how difficult it is to identify someone that you don't know. But obviously everybody at that club knew Mac. They were there to see him. Right. The thing is, you have an unexpected event, a shot goes out, everybody's panicking and running out, and you see Mac running through the club with a gun. And for some of the witnesses, at least initially, it was hard for them to distinguish whether they saw that before or after.
I thought that was
a really interesting phenomenon.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting.
It's really sad because I'm so happy that he's been released and he has this opportunity, but this is a case. And I'm sure for anyone who proclaims their innocence, it's gotta be tough. I'm sure he wants to be exonerated. He wants his name cleared, and it should be. So I hope that that does happen and that the fight doesn't stop, but I'm glad he's home.
There were a lot of things going against him. I mean, I believe that this happened, his trial happened literally like a week after 9/11, and it was an all white jury. And anyone who's old enough to remember the mood in this country was, you know, people fear, just fear, didn't have fear. A lot of Yeah, a lot of fear and just nobody had a lot of patience for anything. People were pissed.
Well, and let's be honest.
They used that fear during the arguments too. You know, they used the fear of some of the lyrics that he said, some of the things that he was saying in his records, and they played on that fear. And that's the scary part. And it just reminds me of what D1 said, you know, if we all were held accountable for the 100%, for 100% of the things that we had said, we all be guilty, man. I know said some things that, you know.
but I mean, how about just art, right? Nobody says Martin Scorsese needs to be locked up because he created Goodfellas or whoever wrote The Silence of the Lambs. I mean, creative people come up with horrific things, and that's art.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, it's no different for Pharrell. But I see the other side too, right? And if you come from a community that isn't familiar with that lifestyle and that kind of art, you don't look at it as art. You do see it as it's a whole lifestyle, right? I mean, let's be honest, there is a reason, and a lot of people may not like this, but the truth is, there is a reason why a lot of hip hop concerts or rap shows and things of that nature, there are fights that break out and people who show up with guns. The reason is a lot of the listeners, a lot of the fans don't realize that's not really that person's way of life. They're just giving you art. They're just giving you beats and things you want to hear, things you could possibly relate to, but that's not necessarily how they're living their life. And I think that's where a lot of the fans get this misconception that they have to be hard like that. And the lyrics get in their head. And if you're angry and you do want to do those things and you're listening to the lyrics, it can influence you. But Rob, just like you said, if you're a sicko and a pervert and all of that, then watching certain movies is also going to trigger you, right? And you're absolutely right. Those people are not held to the same standard. But I think if you're accused of a crime such as this that falls in line, right? Just the simple gun violence, and those are the lyrics you sing, you're absolutely going to be able to manipulate a jury that's not of his peers.
And let's be honest, they were that's not the reason why I'm such a huge advocate, number one, for people, when you are subpoenaed to go to court, go to court. And look, I'll say this firsthand. Us at my race, my family, my people, we are the worst at when it comes
to going
to court. Say it,
Chris, because it is hard to pick a jury sometimes over here.
Yeah. So look, when
you're like, can I get a little more mix up here? This is the Bay Area.
Go to court because they need that influence. They need that person that can come up and say, hey, wait a minute now. Wait, this guy probably doesn't even live this type of lifestyle.
You hear that? Yeah. Black and brown folks, show
Black
up
and brown.
For jury duty, please.
Show up for it. We need it. We have to have
you
it.
You were a defendant. You would want a jury of your peers. And we absolutely need, you know, more diversity and reflection of what the defendant could, where they could be from.
I'd love to take it back to the single witness cases. So cases that Reasonable Doubt has gotten behind in the past. Robert Jones, he's a free man now. That was a single witness case. Roosevelt Miles, he's a free man now. We've done some good here. I am patting us on the back. There are three cases, one from last season and two from this season, that you guys got behind. Michael Crump, Glenn Simmons, and Evaristo Salas. We'll see how those progress. It hasn't been enough time really to get results yet. But I want to go back to this case. And Chris, there was one thing that gave you pause. You spoke to a guy named Russell, who was part of Mac's entourage, and you asked him what happened that night.
So you were right next to Mac the night that this happened. Tell me exactly what happened, or what do you remember?
I was waiting for Mac to perform. Fight broke out. Stepped towards the fight. Mac pulled me back. Said, don't get involved. Don't even go see what's happening. And I followed Mac outside the door. And at that point in time, Mac and I got separated.
This is the account you got from Russell. But then when you spoke to Mac, you asked him what happened.
So walk me through that night. Take me step by step what happened, as much as you remember.
I remember talking to three people. There was two young ladies and a guy. We were standing there.
Do you remember who that guy was?
I think it was James. I remember seeing the fight. I heard the shot. And when I heard the shot, I kind of like backpedaled, and the young lady who was standing next to me, I kind of grabbed her arm and like pulled her down to the ground. And then, you know, I foolishly pulled the gun out of my pocket and ran towards the front door looking for my mom.
Okay, so the part that bothered you is obviously Russell had inserted himself and made him right by Mac's side when the shots rang out, and then Mac doesn't mention Russell at all. So I know you wrestled with that a little bit. Take us through your thought process and how you actually settled on it in the end.
Mac said that they were standing near the front door. So it's kind of understandable that you would hear him say they ran through the front door, and Mac says he gets down. It's probably that Mac did run out through, got down and ran out the front door, and then remembered, okay, my parents are in here, so I need to pull out my weapon. So I can reconcile that in my head. That's understandable. Those little fine points, those would be some of the things that can probably be reconciled in my head as an investigator. But the people that he was standing around in front of right around that same time, that was important for me, because here are the people that if they were to be put on the stand, these are the same people that would be advocating for you, saying that you couldn't have done this because we were all here. So you want those stories, or at least you want him to be able to name the people that he was standing around during that time, and they couldn't do it. So that was a little bit of that was concerning to me. But overall, looking at this entire case, you know, I still had so many different problems in the way that the entire investigation was happening, and the way that it took place. So those were a few. Him not being able to say the exact people that were standing around him, while it gave me concern, it wasn't a deciding factor in me determining whether or not he's guilty or innocent.
The good news in this case, because this case is very disturbing, it should absolutely disturb everyone, the fact that we have the one witness identification, the circumstances of that night, but also that we have somebody else who confesses to the crime, right? And as an expert on our show mentioned, it seemed like an authentic confession, like he was telling the truth. So it's very disturbing to think that this person has spent 21 years in prison for this crime, but especially for the victim's family. I would be surprised if they haven't been shouting as well, demanding justice in this case, or asking questions about, you know, what about this other person that came forward and confessed? But it's the only thing that I think comforts me, the only thing out of this entire case, is that we are dealing with Louisiana. And back then, we know Louisiana did not require unanimous jury verdicts. And it was not a unanimous verdict in this case.
When you finally told the family that you were going to get behind the case, when you told Sheila and McKinley, that was a very, very emotional moment. And really, for me, I remember exactly where I was sitting when that happened, but that was the moment when I realized that this show was more than just a show, that this was, we had hit on something that was important and pretty powerful.
What you have had to endure as a father, hopefully something that was said, something that's been done here today, will be a new day for you and your family.
Hey, I appreciate y'all. I appreciate everything y'all doing and have done. I appreciate y'all. I really do, man.
It is hard for me to even put myself in your shoes. I could never imagine what you've gone through. It's a real testament to your strength. As a family, as a father, you should consider yourself proud of the man that you are, because I'm proud to even sit here across the table from you. You have done an awesome job as a father. And it's time for us and this system to carry some of this weight for you, because we have failed.
Yeah, man, my sinuses were acting up real bad.
Chris, I have never seen you cry so hard.
Maybe I should try some of that local honey.
Don't even lie.
Yeah,
that was emotional.
Yeah, it was, man. And y'all know how I am. Y'all know my son. Y'all know how much I talk about him and how much I brag on him, man.
Oh, CJ,
my boy. So you know, I can't imagine not being with my boy like that. I can't imagine it. And yeah, it hurts to think about it, man. So this man has been fighting for his son for 20 years for something that two investigators came in and looked at the case and agreed that, man, this is problematic. This is even years after us doing this episode, we're still crying and saying the same thing, man, that this is wrong. This could happen to our children. This could happen to anybody.
If the circumstances, how many people are behind bars under these?
If the same type of circumstances present themselves, this could happen to anyone's children, and we should not be okay with it. We shouldn't. Mm-mm. So yeah, this one was rough. I still get emotional about it. I still do.
I appreciated, Chris, how you said, you know, as law enforcement, you felt shame that this is the kind of job they did. And that if that meant that you giving all that you've given to law enforcement and this career and missing out on your family time, if this was the kind of detective you were and the kind of cases that, you know, you basically were convicting people on, then it wouldn't feel right. It would be in vain. Those parents, they deserved better. They were good parents. Gosh, the fact that they were there and why the dad said he was there, you know, because he knew this lifestyle could be dangerous, and he knew his son wasn't really a part of it, but he just wanted to make sure. So he made sure to go to all the shows and be there. That says a lot.
It does. And it's not justice. It's not justice to the Victor family. And, you know, mm-hmm. they've reached out to me on a few occasions, and, you know, they haven't been served justice. And that's the worst part about it. This young man is no longer with us. The work that was done on this case not only has affected Mac, his family, and everyone surrounding him, but it affects the Victor family. And that is one of the biggest tragedies, because they're dealing with it every single day, not having their son around. And that's not okay at all.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to a bonus episode of the Reasonable Doubt podcast. We're talking about the release of Mac Phipps, the very first episode that we did in season one. And when we come back, Chris and I have a chance to catch up with Mac and see how he's doing now that he's out of prison. We'll be right back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Janice from Warner Brothers Discovery. Spring is officially in bloom here in the Northern Hemisphere, and with a fresh season underway, you might be seeking your own transformation. For some, that means a new approach to weight loss or nutrition. Noom has a unique approach. Noom is tailored to each person's psychology and biology. It's built to meet you where you are, because Noom understands that no two people are the same. Noom stands out to me because it offers a holistic approach to well-being. From coaching to recipes, Noom's app provides personalized information to help you on your journey. I also think it's great that Noom doesn't restrict what you can eat, and it doesn't shame you for treating yourself, and treat yourself you should. What's more, Noom believes in nourishing rather than restricting. Noom can help you lose weight while still enjoying your favorite foods, because this approach is about eating well and treating your body right. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your free trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Doubt podcast. All right, Chris, we finally got a chance to connect with Mac. It has been, maybe a month or two since he's been released.
Yep.
And it was really, really good to connect with him. So here is our conversation with Mac Phipps, a free man.
Mac Phipps, what's going on, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm well, man. It is good to see you here at home with your family, man. It is absolutely an honor for me to finally get to see you in person.
And guess what? It's an honor for me too.
Yeah, man. So I'm on. Let's go ahead and get started, man. Because I don't want to waste a moment of us conversating about this, man. How's it been since you've been out, man?
It's been an adjustment, but it's been great. It's been great, man. Honestly, it's been good. You know, it was good to reconnect with my family, of course.
Absolutely.
It's been, you know, just good to be free, man. Just to be away from that place, not having to be head counted, and that's pretty much the gist of it. It's just been great, man.
How's mom and dad doing?
Oh, they good. They good.
Yeah.
You know, I hug them and kiss them like a little kid every time I see them. So they excited about that. They're just glad I'm here.
I don't blame you, man. You know, when we
we all happy right now.
Yeah, that is great. You know, when we first met and I met your dad, man, he and I, you know, I'm a father too, man. So it was hard for me to sit there and look at your father and see the hurt on his face. You know, us as fathers, we always want to be there to protect our kids. And then you're in a position where there's nothing he can do, man. I was just feeling that. I'm going to tell you, and at the end of this, I'll tell you exactly the reason why it was so touching. But I want to get into this interview, man. So were you able to reconnect with some of the people that you kind of lost contact with, some of the friends that were out there?
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of reconnected with pretty much not everybody so far, but with a lot of people, man. I just been going to see everybody, just, you know, everybody been wanting to see me. So I just been making sure I reconnect with the people that matter to me.
Absolutely. So we had D1 on the episode when we filmed this, and I understand that you and he were very, very close even during your time in prison.
I actually met D at the prison. He came there to speak at it. Yeah, he came there to speak at an event that we had there, like in 2009 or 2008. And man, we've been good friends ever since. He's just a solid dude.
Back then, I had a different partner than I have now. When she talked to D1, he said that the lyrics that you used in some of your raps were not really the type of person that you are. Was he true when he said that?
Right. I mean, it's when, you know, how rap with hip hop, I don't think, let me just state for the record, I think that most of the lyrics that most artists use are really more artistic expressions. Now, of course, I do think that there are some guys, a few guys, that really talk about stuff that's actually true reflections of their life or lifestyle at the time. But I think most of it is just art, bravado, braggadocio. I mean, that's what we do. And for me, I just was a battle rapper from way back. That's just what I did, you know, and things changed. The language I used was a reflection of, I guess you would say, the market that I found myself in at the time, because I'm a company man. And whatever the market is demanding, I'm going to push it. That's the way, that was the mentality at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a true reflection. I think what he said is a true reflection of that.
Okay. So, yeah, I can understand that. We all have whatever we have to add to this society, you know, we utilize that in order to get ahead. I mean, look, I grew up in the streets, and I hadn't been a police officer my entire life, but I mean, I found something I was good at. That's my niche. So that's what I used to try to get ahead. I completely understand. And I feel that hip hop is the exact same way.
Right. I totally agree. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I mean, and Mac, this is Rob Rosen. I was I'm the executive producer of Reasonable Doubt. So we were really pleased that we were able to get behind your case. But isn't it really similar to, like, I don't know, you have a Scorsese movie, Goodfellas, or something like that? I mean, nobody thinks, Martin Scorsese is a serial killer. I mean, he has movies with tons of death counts, or, you know, Schwarzenegger has movies and, you know, kills a bunch of people. But for some reason, when it comes to rap, everybody somehow thinks that there's no separation between the artist and the lyrics.
Well, I think that for two reasons. I think one of the reasons is that as hip hop artists, we oftentimes give the impression that they are true to what they're saying, because I think it adds to the marketability. Actually, unfortunately, it adds to the marketability. So they promote this idea that they are true to what they're saying, when I think in most cases that's false. And as far as with the movies, and, you know, I don't like to point fingers, but what I'll say is, there is obviously a different approach when dealing with actors, like you said, versus hip hop artists. I think just society at large tend to be more judgmental of hip hop artists than they do actors. Mm-hmm. For what reasons? I don't want to speculate. I'm just stating the obvious.
I think we all know.
You know, Mac, after we reviewed your case, and I learned what I learned about how you were prosecuted and the investigation that went into your prosecution. You know, I've been a part of several interviews advocating for you and advocating for the change in investigations. One thing that I've heard on more than one occasion while I'm doing these interviews is about a conspiracy to take down No Limit Records. Now, do you believe that there was a conspiracy, or do you think that your case was a part of it?
I don't want to speculate, but I do know that we were being followed at times. This is what I can speak from firsthand experience. We were being followed at times. We were being watched. But I'll just say, it just so happened we were all getting locked up right behind each other. So I want to speculate why, but I'll just say that it's a hell of a coincidence.
Right.
But I do know that we were being watched and being followed. That I know firsthand.
Look, I was a cop during that time, and I remember the effects of a No Limit record, you know, when we played it at clubs and parties and things of that nature. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is you're a guy that's coming from, you know, New Orleans. You didn't grow up, you know, being a millionaire type artist. And then here's this guy, Master P, that has this huge following and has something special. He sees something special when you signed you. And then how was it to change?
I felt like you were a part of something bigger than you. Mm-hmm. And I can say that it did feel like I was a part of something bigger than me, and something that was moving, and something that was relevant around the world. And I think from that perspective, it felt good. It felt good to know that I was a part of something that was big, it was relevant, and it was moving. You know, it was moving. It appeared to be moving upward. And it felt good. You know, I think a lot of times we were misjudged, but as far as from a business standpoint, this was a real business, and it was ran, when I tell you, like a business / military. Like it was, you know, serious business.
Yeah.
And it was just a fun time for me, because of course I was 19, 20, 21 years old. So,
right.
You know, it was something, man.
Let's talk about the night that all of this happened, the night that changed the whole trajectory of your career. Mm-hmm. And I know we discussed it over the when we did the show and talked about some of the things that happened. But I do want to ask some questions about it. So tell me about that night. Let's talk about that night. How was it? How was the vibe at the club? And let's just talk about it. Let's
I mean, it was, I guess it was normal in comparison to other nights at clubs. Let me state the tragedy, you know, that happened to that young man. And, you know, it was one of those things that when in reflection, you know, I just wish that it could all been undone. You know, it's certain things that you can't undo.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of those nights in my life that I wish I could have just replayed over again, hit a restart button and wish that it never happened.
When the cops first came and talked to you about this, you probably thought, okay, they're just going to ask you a few questions and this is going to go away. What was the point when you realized, oh my God, this literally could turn into something where they're going to press charges against me? I mean, was there a moment where you're like, shit, like they really are looking at me seriously?
Right. So, okay. So here's the weird thing. I had no idea someone was actually shot until I got to my house. When I got to my house, the guy who was babysitting my brothers, my younger siblings, told me that St. Tammany Parish called and were looking for me to question me about a shooting. It was at that moment that I came to the realization that someone had been shot. Now, at the club, I heard the gunshot. We all ran out of the club, but I didn't know that someone was actually shot until I got to my house. So now, you know, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, because I didn't shoot anyone, they're going to question me, of course. I mean, this was an event. I had my posters on the wall there, so of course they're going to talk to me. So I just thought it was going to be like more formality. Okay, what happened? What you remember? This, that, and the other. So when they took me to the, I think it was the Klein Peter substation, and they were questioning me, I mean, I was still feeling confident about going home because they hadn't told me that someone died yet either. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, the person who was shot, obviously he knows who shot him and we're just being questioned. This is just protocol, you know, cop protocol. A guy came in the room and whispered to the detective. And then the detective turned to me and that's when he informed me that it had went from a shooting or an investigation to a shooting to an investigation of a homicide. So that's when it was that all moment for me, because now the person whom I felt would eventually tell them what happened to him was now deceased. Mm. Now this charge can be really pointed in anybody's direction.
So let's talk about one of the probably the most pivotal points in this case, Mac. It was one of the things that made my jaw just drop, because I had never heard of anything like this before. But there was another guy that actually confessed to your case. Yeah. Right. So, and from my reading, now I don't want to say his name or anything like that, I understand that this man was rather close to you, and he actually went down to the police department and confessed. And this was after you were arrested?
Yeah, it was like 10 days after my arrest, I believe.
Uh huh. Had prior to that, had you already known that who was the actual person that committed this murder?
Well, what happened was I was told a couple days earlier, I was like, man, such and such said that he, you know, he was feeling guilty and he was feeling bad and he was fighting with it, right? Mm-hmm. And that he was thinking about turning himself in, and he did. And I thought at that point, I'm going home. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, so if this guy is the person who did it and he's going to tell them he did it, you know, I was in the dorm, like getting ready to, I'm thinking it's over with. You know, I'm thinking that this is how this works. If someone comes clean and say they did it, and, you know, I'm going to be let go. But that's not what happened.
Who all came to the club with you that night?
It was aunts, uncles, and neighborhood friends.
Mm-hmm.
Cousins. I was probably there with who I came there with. It probably was around 20, 25 people that I came there with.
Yeah, that's right. We spoke to one of them, Russell.
Mm-hmm. Remember? He was standing next to me.
One thing that I was looking for you to say, and I can say this now, I mean, you're out and all of this is behind us, but one thing that I was looking for you to say was to tell me that Russell was there with you. During the time that the shooting actually happened. And that's how investigators go to verify some of the statements that they get. So when we talked,
I was hoping that, yeah, man, Russell was right here with me. You know, that's what I was looking to hear for. I didn't get that from you. Right. So during the episode, I kind of, you know, I told your mom and your dad that I didn't get the exact same story. So, but I think later you came back and cleared it up that Russell was with you.
See, I thought you was, when you originally asked, I thought you were speaking of the people who are, I was standing there, I really wasn't even thinking you were referring to, as you would say, this was my entourage.
Uh-huh.
I was standing to the right of me were this young lady, her friend, and her friend's boyfriend. And that's who I was talking to right there. But once the shots were fired, that's when I turned this way. Russell was standing here, and I think Daryl, who is now deceased, was standing somewhere like in front of me. Mm-hmm. And we all ran.
Yeah. Wow.
Mac, I have a question. When you spoke to Chris back when we were looking into your case, you just had no bitterness. And even now, it doesn't seem like you allowed that to eat you up. But there's got to be a moment, right? You're a young kid. You're making money. You're living the dream. You're performing in front of crowds. They all love you. And then the next thing you know, you're being convicted of something you didn't do. I mean, there had to be a dark moment where you're like, you were going into a dark place. Did that ever happen? Or did you always keep your head up?
Oh, well, the dark moment, I would like to just add that it was dark moments with S, like a whole bunch of them. So let me just say that for the record. It was several dark moments. You know, it's one of the things that I'm not a religious person per se, but, you know, I do have my personal beliefs and I do believe in prayer. So for me, one of my prayers were, it was two things that I asked and that carried me through this time. One of them was I prayed to not ever get blackhearted. I never wanted to become a dark, bitter person because of what happened to me, because I didn't think that was a good way to live or a way, I didn't think it would be productive for me in any way, shape or form. So I always, you know, even though I had those moments, those were the times where I went and I prayed, just like, I don't want to feel like this. I never liked feeling like that. It used to make my stomach hurt. It wasn't a good feeling. The other thing was, you know, I was new to prison. I didn't know anything about it. So, of course, I had the natural fears that the average person that goes into an unknown environment have. And I didn't trust what I would become. Mm-hmm. In response to what I thought prison was going to be. Like, I didn't want to become a person who was just fighting and beating people all the time because of my fears of the way prison life is. And those were the two things that I battled mentally and emotionally against, and they kind of carried me through.
Mm-hmm. You know, that is amazing for me to hear, Mac. We have a lot of guys that I talk to. I have a lot of guys that have been in prison for as many years that you have, and they get out and they're very, very bitter. They've gone into that dark place. What can you offer up to any of those guys that may be listening to this podcast?
I would say to them that I feel you. I have been there. Firsthand experience. I know what those feelings are like. And they know the answer, because they know as well as I know it's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. And I don't like feeling bad. Yeah. So I would encourage them to find ways to, whether it's through prayer or through just doing productive stuff. It's why I volunteered in the prison. It's why I found things that put me in a position to help others that were going through even worse things that I was going through. Through that, it humbled me and it helped me view my situation from a different perspective, and to also view it from your victims or your victim's family perspective. You know what I mean? Just knowing that, you know, yes, this may have been a terrible thing that happened to you, but how do you think those people feel? They lost their family member. So yes, you are going through something that is wrong. You may have been wronged by the quote unquote legal system, but this family lost their loved one. They are going through something that they can't get back. And it's those type of thoughts that kept me humble and kept me mindful of the bigger picture of what was going on.
So if you had anything that you could say to the Victor family, what would it be?
I would say to them that I am terribly sorry and emphatically sorry that this happened to your loved one, because I believe that I failed to adequately provide a safe environment for the patrons of that event. And, you know, we have fought this case for 21 years to prove my innocence, because legally I was innocent of this crime. I had nothing to do with what led to the fight that killed this young man. I had nothing to do with the killing itself. But my responsibility was, this was my event, Chris, and that was not supposed to happen. So evidently it was my youth or lack of responsibility or whatever it was. I hold my feet to the fire for this happening to that young man and his family. Mm-hmm.
So it's been if I remember right, your trial was right after 9/11, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So it's been 20 years. How much has the world changed? Does it just feel strange being out here?
Oh, I feel like a dinosaur. I feel like a dinosaur. I feel like a fish out of water. Everybody's walking around on their phone. Their heads are down. Nobody's talking to each other. This is crazy. People text each other in the same room. This is weird. When I left the streets, the phones were flipping. And all you can do is chirp with the little extra. Right.
I think so we were better off back then, actually.
Me too.
Wow. Three dinosaurs having a conversation about that.
My wife has to, everything dealing with technology, my lovely wife here has to take care of it, because I don't know nothing about what's going on with this technology.
That is good, man.
Do we have a comeback album coming?
That was going to be my next question right there.
See, the way my mind is kind of set up, I'm set up to deflect that question. I would say to you that, yeah, we got something coming.
Man, see, that's great for me to hear, Brad, because I don't even remember if you remember this portion, because I don't think it aired, but you and I had that when we were doing our interview. I asked you if you were going back into music, and you said, no. So it's good to hear that you're back in the studio, you're doing something, man, because look, Brad, hip-hop needs you right now. We do.
Man, and look, hip-hop saved my life. So I need hip-hop. So, you know, and you probably, when I talked to you at that time, I probably was in one of the moments where I was like, you know what, I ain't thinking about hip-hop. Because guess what? Me and hip-hop has been, we've been kind of tied to each other since 1984. We have a very strange relationship. I hate her some days. She hate me some days. I don't want to be bothered with her. And then we come back, and no matter how far I try to push away from her, it's like she'd be looking at me like, you serious?
Right. You like that girlfriend, you just can't get rid of.
Right.
You can't.
It's like, we in this for life, dude. You can't go.
That's right.
Now I'm looking forward to the album. I know I don't look the part, Mac, but Chris can tell you, he and I take long road trips for this show, and I've got a pretty good playlist, so looking forward to adding it.
Mac, you would not believe this dude's playlist, man. You wouldn't believe it, Brad. And it's not like, you know, it's just some of this new hip hop that's coming out. I'm talking about some of the old stuff too, you know. So yeah, dude, it's extensive. Like, I was impressed.
I mean, I'm gonna tell you, I like some of the new hip hop that's out. I like some when it got some substance. I like it, but I'm old, man. I mean, I've come to the conclusion that I'm old, so I like old stuff. I feel just the way the older people when we were growing up felt when they would tell us that music is garbage. That's how I feel. Right.
But you know, look, hey, I love having hip hop conversations. Most folks don't believe how deep I am into hip hop, man, but I love it. So yeah, I found that there are some new artists that have some really good substance, but they don't get the same play as some of these mumble rappers that's getting out there. You know,
that's the wave, as they told me. I learned that word. They told me that's the wave. So
yeah.
You know, they didn't call the wave. Well, I ain't called the wave. I can't swim, so I don't know. I'm in the wave. I'm just not catching it.
Right.
So let everybody know I'm old. So my music is a reflection of me. It's old.
By the way, your parents were such. You know, when we did the show, your parents were such the emotional heart of the show. How are they doing with you back? I mean, obviously they're ecstatic. And are you still helping your mom out at her art gallery?
Oh yeah, actually, me and my wife have an office. Office with our studio in it, and it's right across the hall from my mother's art gallery. Yeah. So she's literally right across the hall. And so now we all, you know, we kind of all here. And you know, my mom was the when I watched the Reasonable Doubt, you know, we all know it's like a running joke with us. We know my mom gonna keep that poker face. My dad, you know, break down. They're gonna break down. when it comes to my dad talking about one of his kids, he gonna break down. That's
yeah, it. Man. Yo,
well, I think everybody broke down at the end of that episode.
Y'all got my brother to cry. That blew my mind. I've never seen my brother cry in my life. When I saw Chad cry, I was like, "Whoa, this is a momentous moment."
That was all just light, and you know they like to flash those lights in my eyes and that stuff that was coming out of my eyes. Yeah. It's just eyeball sweat, bro. That's all it was.
So yeah, that's pretty much how I did. You know, being in prison, I used to just like look in the air, play it off. I definitely appreciate it, Chris, and I can tell sincerity. I kind of got a radar that senses sincerity. And when I watched the show, I could tell that you were sincere.
I was, man. At the time, I think I might have shared this with your mom or your dad. When we went back to New Orleans the year after when we were filming, I took your mom. I was trying to take your dad out to dinner one night. And we were supposed to go. She said, "We need to go to Dookie Chasers." That's what your mom told me. Okay. So we went over there and they were closed or something like that. So we ended up going to another restaurant. But the next time I'm down there, I'm taking your mom out to Dookie Chases. And I would love for you and your wife and anybody else you want to bring. I want to take y'all out there so I can experience the New Orleans. So, but the reason why I was going through a lot during your episode, man, is because my son, I was having problems with my son. Rob knows this. And I think I told your mom about it, man. I was having problems with my son. And, you know, we weren't even speaking. And my son was at 17, 18 years old at the time, man. Mm-hmm. We weren't even hardly speaking. I just didn't think that he was putting his best foot forward. But then when I sat across from the table with your father, and he is a man that loves his son just as much as I love my son, and he can't even grab his son when he wants to.
Right, right.
That was
it's kind of sobering. It's one of them.
It is, man. It and now, man, I went home, man. And I think after we got home, I stayed at home with my boy, man, and we just sat down and talked. And then the next time we went out, man, I flew him out with me. I just didn't want to even let him go. So your family and y'all's story has such an impact on me, man, that it affects me to this day. And I appreciate y'all allowing us to come in, man.
And if that was the effect, or if that was the purpose for us meeting, then I'm cool with that. Because I'm gonna tell you, when I was in prison, seeing other people, and that's what I guess I was trying to elaborate on earlier, seeing other people go through stuff that was worse than me is what kind of sobered me up and kept me humble. Like the guy who slept across from me, he had been locked up 46 years for a rape he didn't commit. And the Innocence Project eventually got him out like a couple years ago. But this was the most humble, great person that you could ever be around. He always had a smile on his face every day, and you can ask him for anything. And he was in prison during a time where it was hell. And that's the kind of situation that pretty much kept me like, yo, dude, you think you got it bad? This man got a life sentence. You know you are going home one day. They got to release you out of this place. This guy has a life sentence. And in Louisiana, there is no parole for a life sentence.
Right.
So it's stories like that that always reminded me that if you think you got it bad, look at this. So sit your butt down somewhere, basically what was being told to me.
Right. That's deep, man.
Well, thank you so much for the update. And God, we can't wait for, we're going to be looking for that release, that album.
All right. I look forward to hearing your feedback on the release. And I'm going to say again, my disclaimer is I'm an artist.
I'm looking forward to it, bro. I really am looking forward to it. So yeah, I will, it'll be played many a times before Rob and I get together. We'll sit down
We may have to get it on the podcast again or something.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm with it, bro. I am with it. Well, anyway, man, it's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, see you face to face while you're on this side, man. You take care of yourselves. And if there's anything that I can do or anybody on this show can do for you, man, you let us know.
I'm same here. And y'all take care of yourself. Chris, Rob, y'all take care of yourself. Whatever y'all need, man, just call me again. I'll be back.
Got you, man. Right. We appreciate you, brother.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure to talk to Mac. I'm really, really proud and happy to hear that he's back in the studios and doing music because, you know, he was unsure about when we talked to him during the episode, he was unsure about going back into music. But now it's really, really good to hear that he's still working in his passion and he's trying to move forward with his life. And now he's doing it as a free man. So that was great.
He just sounds like a really great guy that he's healed so much from this, doesn't carry that bitterness. And I absolutely loved his compassion for the family. That's something that showed on the episode when it aired years ago, and it still shows today how much he wants justice for that family.
And he even took that on himself when Chris and I spoke to him, where he said, look, I was in a situation where this was a concert where people were going to my show, my fans, and I wasn't able to protect them. He's actually even taking a little bit of that on, which was, I thought was really amazing.
Yeah, that was amazing. And for him to go 20 years in prison and still feel, even though he still maintains his innocence, but he still feels responsible for this man's death because he says that he didn't protect him. He didn't provide a safe environment for the people that were there. That's huge.
I really hope his attorney is able to get him an exoneration in the end and he's properly compensated, because when you're just released, early release on parole, you don't have that opportunity, right? Nobody's saying you were wrongfully convicted, and that's what he deserves in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris, as you always say, the show's mission is either to free a family or to free a convict. And in this case, it's really rewarding to feel as though whatever small part we may have had in it, but we helped free an innocent man.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's the reason why we do the show, man. It's not, we've said this on some of our interviews that we've had, and me and Fatima and I do our, you know, our Instagrams and things of that nature, is much bigger than a show. And we always have this conversation. It's much bigger than a show that we're doing. We are affecting people's lives, and that carries a huge weight. It carries a huge weight. And I'm glad that we all understand it and we utilize it to the best of our abilities.
And I'm just proud that there are times when we do feel, maybe we could possibly help, but if we're not together on it, then, you don't want to give false hope to families. That's the issue at the end of the day. I know a lot of people, you watch our show and you feel like we're giving people false hope just by listening to their case, but these are people who have had questions for years. These are people who want some answers, and whether or not they like the answers doesn't matter. They're getting answers. They're getting responses to things that they've wondered about. They're getting experts that they don't have to pay for to give opinions on things. And experts can be very pricey if these people wanted it on their own. So the reality is it would be better for us to sit there and say, I'm sorry, we can't help you, rather than give them false hope to continue a fight for years to come. But when we do stand behind a case, which I would have absolutely, had I been your partner, then been with you on this case, it feels great because you know that we're not giving this family false hope. It might be an upward battle for sure. It's difficult when you're dealing with appeals, but we're right there with the family. We're going to get the fans to join in. We're going to get people to help because we really believe in a case, and we don't think it's giving the family false hope. We think in the end, it can end up like this, where somebody is either early release, paroled early, or hopefully exonerated.
you know, we can't really count the 10 episodes and the 10 cases that you guys did in season four, because that just happened. But there were 30 cases before then. And five of those people that are profiled are out of prison, are free. One we didn't get behind, but there are five people that are out. So I think the magnitude and the impact that you guys have can't be understated. I think that it's, you know, what you guys are doing is a service, whether it's freeing the family and letting them know this fight's probably not going to go anywhere, or whether it's really getting behind an injustice, like in this case, you guys do good work. So hopefully we will see you all for a season five. We will keep our fingers crossed. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to this bonus episode of the Reasonable Doubt podcast. My name's Rob Rosen. I'm the creator and executive producer of Reasonable Doubt.
And my name is investigator Chris Anderson. I'm a retired homicide detective and co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
And I'm Fatima Silva, criminal defense attorney and co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
Thanks for supporting us this season. Hopefully, we will see you again soon.
Peace.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.